The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. On today's show, we've got a lot to talk about. There was a bus bombing in Jerusalem last night, and this comes right at a time when the knife attacks were beginning to taper off, many had said. Later on in the segment here, this first segment, we'll also look at this alarming Fox News report about the U.S. Marine Corps facing all kinds of budget cuts and low morale, aging aircrafts. It's, as I say, a report that really should be setting off alarm bells in Washington. And today, as I alluded to yesterday, we'll also look at the Trumpet Daily Radio Show by the numbers. This is, for me personally, this is my 200th radio program. We've, of course, had a number of substitutes over the past year, filling in at various times, which means that we've produced quite a few more than just 200 shows. But for me, this makes 200. So we'll talk about some of the numbers, some of the listening patterns. And hopefully, if we have time later in the show, we'll also get into quite a lot of feedback that's piled up, emails that have come in. You can send us your emails, by the way, to td@kpcg.fm. We'll also, if we have time, go through a few letters that have come into the mail processing center here at the Ed Stone office. Well, last week I talked to you about the Russian fighters that buzzed that Navy destroyer in the Baltic Sea, and how that the White House spokesman came out and said that this was entirely inconsistent with professional norms. As one columnist said, this was all that the White House could put forward, this subdued, carefully worded statement in response to this provocative act. Well, the White House spokesman was asked about this at yesterday's press conference, and this is the question followed by his response.
Can you say if President Obama raised the issue of the buzzing of the U.S. warship in the Baltic earlier last week?
I asked this specific question, and that did not come up in the call between the two presidents.
Really?
As I mentioned yesterday, those kinds of activities are destabilizing and a source of some concern, but they're not particularly unusual.
That's him talking about the call, but I should have set that up a bit better, but that's him talking about the call between President Obama and Vladimir Putin. They talked over the phone yesterday, and as the reporter says there, I mean, did they talk about this issue of the buzzing of the U.S. warship? And Josh Earnest says, no, they didn't. It didn't come up. And the reporter, if you heard him in the background, he's like, really? It didn't even come up? It didn't even come up. We mentioned this article yesterday by Mark Halperin, talking about how President Obama is either embracing America's enemies or opposing them only with exquisite delicacy, as he said. that's about what you hear coming out of the White House spokesman. Just exquisite delicacies. It's inconsistent. And again, we went through this last week, so I don't need to repeat myself too much. But it does set the stage for this other report. As I mentioned, you put this broken will together with the broken budget, together with just the decline in the morale, the decline in the numbers joining the Marine Corps, and now the outdated aircraft that the Marine Corps is making use of. Well, you heard that in that exchange yesterday, talking about that buzzing, that flyby, And just over the reports, or rather the weekend, CNN reported that there was another incident involving a Russian fighter with this U.S. Air Force reconnaissance plane. And apparently, and this is in the same region there at the Baltic Sea, it was during a routine flight for this reconnaissance plane, the U.S., that is, in international airspace. And then here comes this Russian jet who barrel rolled over the reconnaissance plane. This is according to CNN. The incident Thursday occurred when a Russian jet performed an erratic and aggressive maneuver as it flew within 50 feet of the U.S. aircraft's wingtip. 50 feet. I think that's about what it was with the Navy destroyer as well. But notice this. This says that, this is CNN. The Russian Su-27 began the barrel roll from the left side of the U.S. RC-135 and then went over the top of it, the top to the end on the right side of the aircraft. So it barrel rolled over this reconnaissance airplane. This American airplane, this American aircraft, this RC-135. So in that exchange yesterday with the reporter first asked about, okay, he called President Putin Monday morning. Did they talk about this buzzing? No, there was nothing said about that. And then the reporter followed up and said, well, there was another incident. Did they talk about this? Here's how the exchange went.
There was another incident over the weekend where the U.S. A Russian aircraft intercepted a U.S. reconnaissance plane. Yeah. Has a complaint been lodged by usual channels on that incident?
Yeah. Well, Mark, I think this is a good illustration of just how these kinds of incidents, while provocative and concerning, are not particularly unusual.
That's the same response, in other words, to the first question. So there's no response to the provocative act, nothing. And then the only statements that are issued are very carefully worded, using words like inconsistency rather than violate. And then, as you heard yourself just a moment ago, there's the White House spokesman saying, look, this is normal. These things aren't unusual. We should expect these sort of things from Russia. This weak leadership that you see in America, of course, it's traced back to prophecies and like in Isaiah 3, spelled out there in pretty good amount of detail, and other prophecies factor in too. But look at how much weakness the United States is projecting, and look at how much fun Russia's having with our destroyers, with our reconnaissance planes. It's just doing anything it wants, knowing that there's never going to be any retaliation. This article in the Boston Globe yesterday, this is by Jeff Jacoby. He talks about just the doctrine, Obama's doctrine, his foreign policy doctrine, how it's made the world more dangerous. That's what we're seeing. Jacoby says here, the lesson President Obama takes away from the Iraq war was that the United States has no business intervening militarily in the Middle East, and that the greater the intervention, the greater the resulting fiasco. And so that's the Obama doctrine. Anytime the U.S. gets involved, anytime the U.S. meddles, the way he sees it, it just makes matters worse. And so what do we do then? Nothing. Now, there's a few exceptions, like with Libya, but there's a case where the U.S. did do something. And then, even as President Obama himself has admitted, it didn't have any plans for after the invasion, for after bringing down Gaddafi. But for the most part, like Jacoby brings out in his piece, from the beginning, and this is the way Senator Obama campaigned back in 2008. We need to get out of Iraq. We need to get out of Afghanistan. Because everywhere that the U.S. goes, it just makes matters worse. It just gives our enemies more incentive to recruit terrorists, to win support internationally. Jacoby says more leading from behind followed in Syria. Obama issued tough threats of chemical weapons red lines and demanded Bashar al-Assad resign, but the bristling words were never backed up with deeds. And as we now know from the Atlantic interview, President Obama now sees this as something he can brag about. The fact that he issued the red line but had the restraint not to do anything once the line was crossed. Jacoby says, as America's credibility diminished, predictable consequences ensued. Soaring death tolls, is talking about Syria, vast refugee floods, and the emboldening of anti-democratic regimes from Moscow to Beijing. Yet even now, President Obama cannot see that a doctrine premised on avoiding American involvement in the world's conflicts is bound to fail. This touches on something we discussed at length yesterday, building on Richard Palmer's article at thetrumpet.com. Okay, if America pulls back, what does that mean for other nations? If America leaves a vacuum, who's going to fill it? He says here, a policy built around U.S. disengagement only intensifies global disorder. The president concedes that he should have had a better day after plan in Libya, but he still maintains that the calamity his approach caused shows he was right all along. So now Libya, in a twisted kind of a way, is held up as proof of why the United States shouldn't act under any circumstances anywhere. And it's not that far removed from what politicians on the other side are also saying, Donald Trump being chief among them. I mean, he's talked about, hey, let them take care of their mess. Let Syria sort it out. Let Ukraine bother with Russia. Why should we be over there? Why should we be paying for all of this force, this show of force in Southeast Asia, in Europe, or in the Middle East? It says further, this is Jacoby, to this day, Obama has not altered the mindset he started with, that American power cannot fix what ails the planet's bad neighborhoods and will likely make them worse. But Obama's foreign policy stewardship teaches us a very different lesson. Since 2009, America's credibility has been badly eroded, and the world has become far more dangerous and unstable. Our credibility is badly eroded. I mean, who can deny this besides the administration? Who can deny this? We can't even pick up the phone and tell Vladimir Putin to back off. We can't say anything except for, well, it's something that is not consistent. It says, finally, the price of American retreat has been terrible, made all the worse by a president too rigid to change his mind. See, our credibility's been eroded, and the world, as Jacoby says, is far more dangerous today. It's far more unstable today than it was in 2008, 2009. And going together with this trend of instability and danger, you have this shocking report from Fox News about the U.S. military, about the Marine Corps in particular. Again, low morale, facing steep cutbacks, and a lot of its aircraft grounded, 30, 40 years old in some cases. And pilots that, instead of training in the air, are actually having to do double time as mechanics on the ground just to try to fix these old systems that the U.S. is still working with. It's an amazing report, as I said, and one that should have set off alarm bells. This is how, it's from Fox News. I think it ran Friday night, April 15th, so that was last week. And this is how Brett Baer, the host of the program, set up the report.
U.S. Marines at their breaking point, being asked to do more with less. Long wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the fight against ISIS, budget cuts, all taking a toll on the U.S. Marine Corps, forcing fighter jets and helicopters to break down, losing valuable hours in the air to train, and according to the Marines and military analysts, putting our nation at risk.
It's putting the United States at risk. It's putting the U.S. at risk. And it comes at a time, as I say, when America's credibility has been badly eroded. Badly eroded. And here are, as we covered yesterday, all these growing risks of war and the nation itself. As this very popular news station brought out on Friday, the nation itself is at risk. There was a written report together with this video posted online. This is from April 17. And it says here, Fox News, today the vast majority of Marine Corps aircraft can't fly. Is that a problem? Is that going to be a problem for the United States? The vast majority of Marine Corps aircraft can't fly. The reasons behind the grounding of these aircraft include the toll of long wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the fight against ISIS, and budget cuts. Now think about what we've been saying over the past 15 years, how that America's strength would be spent in vain. That's Leviticus 26:20. That's coming right out of the pivotal prophecy of the Old Testament. America's strength would be spent in vain. All these years in the war against terrorism, in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's taken a heavy toll, even on the equipment of the U.S. military. And you have, as I say, you have these pilots, these Marines now, working to try to make all these repairs on the F-18s that we've had for decades. Trying to find parts. Trying to perform routine maintenance. It says here in this Fox News report, only 42 of 147 heavy lift CH-53E Super Stallion helicopters are airworthy. It's the same thing with the helicopters. More than two-thirds of them are not even airworthy. This is to continue from Brett Baer's report, which was, I forget the name of Griffin, maybe. Here's the reporter, though, as she's reporting on this story.
Budget cuts that reduced the force to 30,000 fewer Marines and wars that were supposed to end but didn't are making it harder to patch these old planes together.
Imagine taking like a 1995 Cadillac and trying to make it a Ferrari. You're trying to make it faster, more efficient, but it's still an old airframe, so the aircraft is constantly breaking.
The Marines that we have, we don't have enough of them to do the added work.
Sometimes it takes the Marines 18 months to get parts for these early model F-18 jets whose production was halted in 2000. This F-18 has to deploy again in July.
Production on them halted in 2001. That's 15 years ago. Now, there have been stories. We've talked about this on the program. These F-18s are supposed to be replaced by the F-35s. But as we've reported, there's all these known flaws on these new aircraft that they're building as well. And, of course, together with that, significant budget overruns. All sorts of delays. The Financial Times says the timeline for launching the long-troubled F-35 Joint Strike Fighter just moved to the right again. This is the long-troubled F-35. These are the new ones, okay? The old ones, they're trying to keep functioning. A lot of them are grounded. Same with the Super Stallion helicopters. It says the program, the F-35 program, already years behind schedule, won't be ready for operational testing until mid-2018. I mean, it's 2016. And you're hearing from this report I just played for you the problems that they have now. just trying to work with this aging equipment. And then the steep budget cuts. I'll get to that in a second. And now the delays on the supposed solution, the F-35s, pushed back to 2018. Is this good for the United States? What about all of the growing risks for war, for catastrophic war? What about all of the dangers that are looming between now and 2018? Notice this this next clip from that same report Friday night.
Colonel Crash Thomas has deployed 6 times to Iraq and Afghanistan. Right now, only 2 of his 14 planes can fly. His Marines deploy in 3 months.
We're an operational squadron. We're supposed to be flying jets, not building them.
Most frustrating is that his pilots aren't getting the flying hours they need. Training time in the air is down more than 50%.
And you're supposed to have 15 hours per month, right?
Yep. This last 30 days, our average flight time per pilot was just over 4 hours.
What do you think is causing this sort of backlog?
Money. I mean, everything goes back to funding.
U.S. military spending has declined from nearly $700 billion in 2010 to $560 billion last year.
That's a 5-year period. A 23% decrease in just a 5-year period. You throw in inflation, you adjust those figures for inflation, and it's more like 25%. The United States, the supposed lone superpower in the world, the one that everyone says, well, we still spend so much more than every other nation. But look at the facts. Look at the direction. Look at all of the strength that's been spent. Look at what we have left. I mean, the cuts that they're making in the budget affects even the number of Marines. They've got like less 30,000 less Marines than they used to have just a few years ago. And then all these old aircraft. And then the problems won't go away. Now it's ISIS. Strength spent in vain. And then all these pilots that should be up in the air to continue with their training. What should be 15 hours of training is whittled down to 4. That kind of makes you look at that prophecy in Ezekiel 7 a little bit differently, the one we talk about often with respect to the computer breakdown. That when the trumpet sounds, no one goes out to the battle. Well, when we're being downsized and hollowed out, and when the pilots themselves are not as properly trained as they should be, and then you add to that all of the flaws of the new equipment and the computer vulnerabilities that are surely there, it's no wonder that when the trumpet sounds, no one goes, no one responds. That's Ezekiel 7 and verse 14. Read it for yourself. What a direction. It's shocking. The pride of our power is broken. The strength is being spent in vain. And America is just being besieged by problems, by curses. And here, like it brings out in that report, you have these leaders in the Marine Corps that are asking Marines to make even greater sacrifices than what they're already making, because everything's been stretched so thin. $700 billion per year, and now it's down to $560 billion. Amid all of the other budgetary increases, all the other increases in spending, because, you know, we have money, we have it coming out of our ears, evidently. We can print it off by the trillions. We can still send sell treasury bonds by the trillions. And I mean, we will pay for every program, this administration says, except for the military. 25% decrease. That's what it amounts to from 2010 to 2015. And it's continuing in that downward direction. 25%. Here's the one area where the United States has really tightened its belt financially. The one area that leaves the United States the most vulnerable, if you can believe it. And then you have all of America's enemies and potential enemies, as I discussed yesterday. Well, they're out there flexing their military might, their muscle. And we won't even respond to a provocative challenge. What happens when these combat simulated flybys turn into an actual attack? Well, go back and read Ezekiel 7:14. We're really not even responding now because of this doctrine, the Obama doctrine. Well, you know what the prophecies say. I've read a few of them to you here in this segment. Here we are with all of this aging equipment, with this decline in morale, a decline in numbers, the world becoming more dangerous with each passing day, and all of the new replacement hardware that's supposed to fix everything. There's budget overruns, there's delays, there's mechanical problems. Even if you didn't know what prophecy says, you'd have to begin to wonder, what's going on? How could so many things go wrong all at once? I mean, we've got a broken will. There's obviously not the financial backing like there once was. Here again, what happens when these provocative actions turn into the real thing? Let me just conclude this segment with a clip from one of Herbert Armstrong's old radio programs. This is coming from probably the mid to late 1960s.
Never before in history did any nations that were little nations as we were in the year of 1800 suddenly sprout forth and grow and develop in wealth, in riches, in power, in military power, in financial power, and in political power and prestige among the nations of the world, such as the British and the American nations have done. But my friends, already the British are on the way down. Since World War II, the British have lost a great deal of their power. They are losing their colonies, their foreign possessions, which brought them their wealth. And the United States, at this moment, is having its great strength and its power sapped. It is being sapped and taken away from us, and we don't seem to realize it or to know it. And we don't know why. We are being led into foreign policies and things that we think is wonderful that is merely taking away our strength. And the Russians are so clever that they know that their policy now is bringing the United States down to weaken us to the place where ultimately, if they can keep us going the way we're headed now, they feel that they will finally be able to take us over without any very great fight. It's about time we begin to face the situation and to wake up.
Yes, indeed, it's about time we face the situation and wake up. It's amazing, isn't it? As old as that quote is, you don't even need to... A lot has happened since then, for sure, but you don't even really need to update it or revise it. It's as if he said it yesterday. We're being sapped of our strength. Our power's being taken away. And people don't realize what's happening. And we're being led by a foreign policy that a lot of people think is wonderful. But it's taking away America's strength, isn't it? And the Russians are so clever, and so are the Iranians, and so are the Chinese, and so are the Germans. And all that we can even keep our eyes on, as Mr. Armstrong said in that quote I played for you yesterday, is one enemy at a time. And as it is right now, it's not even really that. Just led along by a foreign policy that we think is great and wonderful. But look at where it's leading us. It's about time, as he said, that we face up to what's happening and wake up. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream's available at thetrumpet.com. When we come back, we'll run through a few more news items before we conclude today's show with some listener feedback and also a few stats and figures about the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The very best minds in the world are in total ignorance of the unprecedented cataclysm that is about to strike. And why have these prophecies not been understood or believed? Because the vital key that unlocks prophecy to our understanding had been lost. That key is the identity of the United States and the British peoples in biblical prophecy. That key has been found. It is presented to those whose unprejudiced eyes are willing to see in this volume, the United States and Britain in prophecy. The events prophesied to strike the American and British peoples in the next few years are sure. These colossal world events, shrinking the first two world wars into insignificance, will come, but not until the warning has been made available for those whose eyes are willing to see. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
That's from a Facebook posting. A group of Palestinian men who were singing praises for yesterday's bus bombing in Jerusalem, in the northern Jerusalem neighborhood of Talpiot. Those men were excited to see that bus blow up, and were probably disappointed when they learned that there were no deaths, at least not yet. 21 people were injured when a bomb exploded on the Egged bus line, bus number 12 in Jerusalem's Talpiot neighborhood, a neighborhood I know well from all of our summers in Jerusalem in recent years, a densely populated area. And, of course, this serves as an unnerving reminder to many Israelis of what was happening there pretty much routinely during the Second Intifada. And one of the reasons there was so much support for building a wall. It says in the Jerusalem Post, this is an opinion piece, for anyone who lived through the Second Intifada, Monday afternoon's bus explosion in Jerusalem brought the past back to the present in an alarming fashion. It was the same routine that became a ghastly second nature more than a decade ago. The media pounced on the story. The murky details began to emerge. The numbers of injured and their conditions were updated by the minute. Their efficient evacuation to area hospitals were covered like a sporting event, play by play. During that first hour or so, the only hope that could be grasped to like a lifeline, was the possibility that a malfunction led to the blaze on the Egged bus, whose shell sat like a scarred skeleton in one of Jerusalem's main thoroughfares. That would have been a horrible tragedy, but it was one we could deal with rationally. But as the smoke cleared, literally and figuratively, and it became apparent that this was a terrorist attack caused by an exploding bomb, the gruesome memories of the relentless string of bus attacks from the past flooded back. It says only days after security briefings pointed to a noticeable drop in knife intifada terrorist attacks in recent weeks, but also warned of a possible uptick ahead of Passover, the worst-case scenario came true. It could have been much worse with major loss of life, but the body count isn't as important as the psychological effect. It concludes here, no matter how many knifings or rammings took place in the last few months, there was still a sense of security. We have fences, walls, barriers, and checkpoints. Buses don't blow up anymore. On Monday, that illusion was shattered. Whether this was a one-time aberration or a hint of things to come, one thing is for certain. When we get on our bus Tuesday, we'll have something new to think about. Yes, yet another source of anxiety, nervousness, yet another grave threat. You have the knife attacks, but still a general sense of security, so long as you watch your back. Knowing that major arms aren't flowing into Jerusalem because of the wall, because of the barrier. Well, now there's some that are making bombs and returning back to that frightful time of the Second Intifada. Well, we'll see if this is just a one-time thing or if this is a sign of things to come, as that individual says there in the Jerusalem Post. Switching over to the immigration problem in the European region, this was reported in the Daily Mail as quoted here from Cal Thomas in his recent column from about a week ago, I think it was, talking about the mass immigration of people coming into the EU and the terrorists that are coming in with them. He says here in a devastating report, the agency hired by the EU to keep member countries safe from jihadists has admitted what should have been obvious to anyone paying attention and taking seriously their threats. It says, while the agency says 1.82 million people made illegal border crossings last year, a six-fold increase over 2014. Listen to that, a six-fold increase over 2014. So this past year, I mean, it's just exploded, the problem. All of these dangers, the world just becoming a much more dangerous place. And just in the last year, it says here, Frontex has said it had no idea how many actual illegal crossings there have been. This is only the number that they're able to count, the 1.82 million. It could be more. It says, furthermore, it's been unable to trace their movements since they arrived and has no way of tracking them. It says here, the Mail says officials warned that a staggering number of European citizens had become jihadists and were taking advantage of lax border controls. So it's just talking about just the overall flow, 1.82 million, and how many have gone unaccounted for, and how many of that figure are jihadists, and how that ISIS has already announced its intention to send jihadis in along with the migrant flow. And so it shouldn't come as a surprise, in other words. When we see attacks in Paris and in Brussels and elsewhere, all across the continent, this last piece here, it's from the Washington Times, about this visit, President Obama's visit to Saudi Arabia. I talked about that a little bit yesterday. That's coming up, I believe, on Thursday, maybe. In any event, It says, with the continuing, this is about the upcoming visit, with the continuing turmoil in the Middle East, this summit normally would be seen as a unique opportunity for a U.S. president to show extraordinary leadership by proposing an enlightening or an enlightened plan for restoring stability to this critical region. I mean, this could be an opportunity if it was an America or a president that was really serious about leading. It says, though, a dark cloud hangs over the summit, dominating the concerns of the leaders of the GCC is President Obama's nuclear agreement with Iran. One of the benefits promoted by the Obama administration is that this so-called historic deal would bring Iran into the community of nations and lead to improved relations with not only the United States, but its neighbors as well. With Iran's continued belligerent attitude and actions, testing ballistic missiles, the humiliation of the seizure of two U.S. Navy riverine craft, it says, on January 12th, and firing missiles in the vicinity of the USS Harry S. Truman, it makes a mockery of the president's propaganda on behalf of the deal. So as we've discussed, I mean, Saudi Arabia knows what's going on, and this deal has done nothing. It's done nothing to change Iran's behavior. It's gotten worse, in fact, and the region is less stable than ever before. And so we'll watch what comes from this meeting that's on Thursday between the United States, or President Obama, and Arab leaders in Saudi Arabia. When we come back, we'll finally get around to some of the responses coming in from you listeners, and also talk to you a little bit about SoundCloud and TuneIn Radio and some of the other things that we talked a fair bit about last year when talking about the very beginning stages of our getting out there with this message and attracting an audience, a group of regular listeners, and that audience does seem to be growing steadily. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
As I said earlier, this is my 200th show. It's pretty amazing how fast these weeks, these months have gone by. And along the way, probably the best way, and this is something that you can see for yourself on thetrumpet.com or at SoundCloud, but the best way for us to track the number of people listening in are just the number of plays on SoundCloud. And just to give you the rundown on last week's programs, I had five programs Monday through Friday. And Monday, SoundCloud shows that there were 1,096 who listened to that program. And then the next day, 902. And then the day after that, 800. And then the last 2 days of the week came in at 1,051 and 1,016. If you add to that all the people that, and some of these things are just purely estimates, and we probably estimate conservatively just so that we don't, we just don't know, so we don't want to estimate too high, I guess. But if you add to that the people listening in live, the people that are also downloading the program, from what we can tell, there's about 130 to 160, 70, or 80 that download the podcast each day onto their device. This is the way I typically do it, just downloading it to my iPhone via iTunes. So that adds another 100, 150 And there's other ways to get the program as well. Of course, you mentioned, or I mentioned TuneIn, that app that you can also have on your radio to listen to Trumpet Radio live. And as of, I think, earlier this morning, I noticed that on the TuneIn app, I hadn't seen it in quite a while, but there's 648 followers that follow us on TuneIn. And there's 400 followers on SoundCloud, by the way. So you have all these different ways. And then, of course, people that could be listening to it live on the actual radio there in North Edmond or on the headquarters campus there at Armstrong College. So the estimate, I think, daily would be somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 13, 14, 1,500. Of course, everyone that downloads the podcast, it doesn't necessarily mean they're listening to each one of them or all 55 minutes of it. But at least these are some of the numbers that come in that give us a pretty good idea of the growth in the audience. I mean, you go back several months and there were usually 3-4 programs just looking at the SoundCloud plays that were down around 300, 400, maybe 500. And so to have a week like we had last week with everyone, pretty much all of those programs getting near 1,000 or just over 1,000, and then together with all of the other ways that people are listening, those are some good solid numbers. And they're, of course, trending in the right direction, and that's what we want. So we certainly do appreciate you listening in, and also we appreciate those of you that have sent in some comments, and we have lots of wonderful comments to try to hurry through here in the last 7 or 8 minutes. This one comes from Washington. It says, I've been meaning to contact you, and today I thought I cannot let another day go by without expressing my thanks and appreciation to you for the radio program and all the other programs. They all make such a difference in my life. You keep all of us listeners informed of world events in the light of Bible prophecy. And he goes on to say how much he appreciates Trumpet Hour, Words to Live By, and Music for Life, just the best literature. Live By Every Word, I think, is the actual title there. In any event, someone who's very, very thankful for all of the programs on KPCG. This one comes in response to the show we did Friday. If you remember, we talked about just the comparison of those two programs on Channel 4 here in the UK, and just what did pose the greatest threat to British culture. This says, I've just finished listening to your program and am appalled that Britain has become so brazen under the cover of darkness. I grew up in the 60s and watched the television programs you mentioned. As a young child, I thought, I want a family like Ozzy and Harriet and Leave It to Beaver. I'm deeply grateful to be a part of a tremendous work and to know one day life as we know it will be better than Ozzy and Harriet and Father Knows Best. So here's one that was familiar with those programs that we talked about, just comparing our culture today with the culture of 50 years ago or so. Those two shows, by the way, I mentioned on Friday, What British Muslims Really Think. Richard Palmer was able to track down the audience size of that one and then the one from the previous night. And from what we could find, 1.2 million people here in the UK watched that program about what British Muslims really think. That was from last Wednesday night. And according to what Richard found, the program the night before, or at least when the program first came out, Sex Box evidently has been around now for about 3 years. And he said that when the first episode played in 2013, there were nearly 1 million people that tuned in for that. So the audience size for Sex Box was not that much less than those that watched What British Muslims Really Think. And that was, you know, that was hyped pretty good here in the British press for people to watch that because of the increasing danger. But this other one attracts a fairly good-sized audience as well, sadly. This next email, again, in response to that same show, Friday show, very good program. One thing I kept thinking about during the program is how freedom demands personal responsibility. If we want to remain free, the majority of society must voluntarily do the right things in our daily lives. It's very true what you said about how society has devolved in the past 50 years. I'm old enough to remember. And then this one here, a short and succinct statement. He listens in on SoundCloud. Thank you for the radio programs. The many topics you cover are earth-shaking, sobering, alarming, precise, refreshing. Truly an amazing voice calling to the world. This one here came in response to a show we did last year, The Nobility of True Repentance. This is just someone from Australia that went back into the archives. As you know, if you go on kpcg.fm or just look at the trumpet.com radio page, you can go back and listen to any of these old shows. And so we'll probably see the plays on SoundCloud increase gradually for a lot of these older programs that are still up there and that you can listen to today if you like. But this one on repentance, he just brings out the point we made in that show that the one who is hurt most when we sin is God. And he mentions how hard that really hit him, and it really has helped him, particularly at this time of year during the Passover season. This next email comes from Suriname. It says, with every passing day and every other TD program, my appreciating is growing more and more in a world with all the trash on the airwaves. It's a great relief to be able to tune into the broadcasting that is really helping us to grow. Thank you and the production family for the effort and work that you're doing to keep us up to date with what's happening in the news. This one here comes from the UK, an email that came in from down south. My wife and I are what you would call shut-ins. We download the programs from the trumpet.com website. We found them to be fantastic, containing so many biblical principles and also news of the work, which is useful when praying. We remember back in the 1990s when we were in the WCG that they told us to get rid of all of Mr. Armstrong's material. When I got home after services, I looked at my bookcase with Mr. Armstrong's material in it, and I couldn't get rid of it, as God used him to give us his truth. And Mr. Armstrong always backed up what he said with Scripture. It's so reassuring that you never cease to mention Mr. Armstrong either in your radio program and on TV. Thank you for keeping us up to date. The stats are so encouraging. It's great that Mystery of the Ages is such a popular request. Well, a few letters here that have come into our mail processing center, coming from all over the UK, very encouraging letters. This one from a man in Sussex. It says, having had a healthy interest in religion of all persuasions for as long as I can remember, you can imagine how thrilled I was to accidentally tune in to one of the televised programs that you put on. The message was so up to date with answers to many of the things going on in the world today. I immediately enrolled in the online college course, and it seems that many of the things that I thought I understood now have been fully explained. That, as I say, comes from Sussex. This next one from a gal in Hampshire, UK. I found aspects of these lessons very challenging. She's talking about the correspondence course. I'll need to redo and redo these lessons, especially lesson 5, to try and grasp fully your way of interpreting the Bible and the concept of the immortal soul, hell, etc. It says, it's a right challenge to be the best part of 40 years, and I thought the lessons show the importance of a sound foundation. This next letter came from Essex in the UK. Thank you for responding to my request for titles. I'm amazed at the resources on offer and the amount of research that's carried out to keep up with the past events in relation to present and future world affairs in the light of the Word of God. This one here comes from Suffolk in the UK. I have a friend who's beginning to wake up to the prophecies of Daniel in Revelation. Well, he goes on to explain that her eyes are being opened to the truth, and he gave her his copies of Who and What is the Prophetic Beast and the Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy and History and Prophecy of the Middle East. So he's writing in to request additional copies for himself as he's been out there literally spreading the word. Letter number 5 here comes from Northamptonshire, UK. Please, would you consider, would you put my name on the mail list for the Trumpet magazine and send me what science can't discover about the human mind and also the correspondence course? And let's see, the last couple here come from Scotland. One says, I follow your Bible teaching on Freeview TV, Sunday mornings. This next one, also a man from Scotland, thanks for sending me your Royal Vision magazine and the trumpet. It's opened my eyes to the gospel. One more here from also Scotland. It seems that whenever I read one of your excellent books or other publications, there are several others that are recommended to me by the author. In this case, Mr. Fleury's book, The Former Prophets, recommends several booklets, and I would be very blessed if you could send them to me. And then he lists off all the books that are mentioned in The Former Prophets, and now he has a much bigger library. Well, those are just a few of the emails and letters that we've been getting in recent weeks, and we sure do thank you for your feedback. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, send those emails to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. And I will see you actually next week. Surprise, surprise.